This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And here are your closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. May corn, 492, up 7.5. July corn, 496.25, up 7. September corn, 491.5, up 5.5. May soybeans, 1436.5, down 3.5. July soybeans, 1407, down 2.5. August soybeans, 1347.5, down 1.25. May wheat, 710.5, up 13.75. July wheat, 714.5, up 13.25. September wheat, 722.25, up 13.5. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. I'm Bob Reese, and this is Thursday's report of the grain prices and trends prepared by the USDA and the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices were mixed on Thursday afternoon. Corn posted gains on better-than-expected exports. Soybeans weakened on lower exports. And wheat posted gains on concerns about the lack of moisture in the western wheat areas. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 8 to 10 cents higher at 458 to 486. Soybean bids were 5 to 9 cents lower at 1394 to 1436. And in the central part of the state, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 7 cents higher at 458 to 487. Soybean bids were 3 cents lower at 1426 to 1442. And in the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were 7 cents higher at 466 to 495. Soybean bids were 3 to 6 cents lower at 1422 to 1456. Wheat bids were 10 to 14 cents higher at 690 to 728. Now from the Illinois Soybean Processors, cash soybean bids were mixed on this afternoon at 1452 to 1477. The basis was steady to 5 higher at 15 to 40 over the May. High Pro soybean meal on a truck basis was offered at 485.50 to 520.50, which was $1.40 higher a ton, with the basis steady at 15 to 50 over the May. Illinois corn processors cash corn bids were 8 cents higher at 480 to 498, with the basis steady at 12 under to 6 over the May. Illinois River Barge Loading Elevators quoted their producer corn bids 5 to 8 cents higher at 491 to 494, with the basis steady to 3 lower at 1 under to 2 over the May. Soybeans ended 6 to 9 cents lower at 1435 to 1443, with the basis 2 to 5 cents lower at 2 under to 6 over the May. New crop wheat prices were 12 to 13 cents higher at 680 to 690, with the basis steady to 1 lower at 25 to 35 under the July. East St. Louis Barge Loading Terminal Elevators placed their producer corn bids 8 to 9 cents higher at 550 to 551, 520 to 521. These elevators lowered their soybean prices 3 to 9 cents with quotations of 1465 to 1472. Soft wheat closed 14 to 15 cents higher at 750 to 751, and Milo ended the day 2 to 12 cents higher at 512 to 517. Now on to contract bids to producers for new crop delivery. In the northern and western part of the state, corn ranged from 447 to 463, soybeans from 1140 to 1179. In the central part of the state, corn ranged from 448 to 466, and soybeans 1159 to 1178. In the southern part of the state, corn ranged from 448 to 468, and soybeans were 1161 to 1192. Soft wheat closed out at 672 to 693. That concludes our report. I'm Bob Reese with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. April live cattle, 146.47, up 67 cents. June live cattle, 138.52, up 90 cents. August live cattle, 135.42, up 57 cents. March feeder cattle, 178.55, up 60 cents. April feeder cattle, 179.50, up 87 cents. May feeder cattle, 179.87, up 75 cents. April lean hogs, 125.47, up $3. May lean hogs, 125.30, up $3. June lean hogs, 129.30, up $3. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Bob Reese with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday, the 27th afternoon livestock report. Starting with the Eastern Corn Belt Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded 2 cents higher in the range of $119.59 to $130, with the weighted average carcass price of $123.74. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows are trading steady to stronger, with moderate demand for light to moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds are 76 to 83. 4 to 5 weights, 80 to 87, 5 to 6 weights, 84 to 90, and 600 pounds and up are 85 to 92. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from 85 to 92. Receipts for Illinois hogs today totaled 12,529 head. And now the report from the Greenville Livestock Auction. From Wednesday, March 26th, they had receipts of 850 head, starting with the choice slaughter steers. They were 150 to 162.50. Select and choice were 140 to 148.50. Select steers were 134 to 137. Choice slaughter Holstein steers, 134.50 to 141.50. And select and choice were 124.50 to 135.50. Select and choice heifers, choice heifers were 150 to 160.50. Select and choice were 146, and select heifers were 120 to 130. On to the feeder steers, medium and large ones. Three weights brought 259. Four weights were 208 to 230. Five weights were 193 to 208. And six weights were 175 to 181. Feeder Holstein steers, large threes, three weights, 162 to 170, four weights were 154 to 160, and five weights were 132 to 162. Feeder heifers, medium and large ones, three weights were 200 to 227, four weights were 181 to 215, and five weights were 180 to 197. They also had some six weights at 149 to 179. Feeder bulls, medium and large ones, three weights were 220 to 238, four weights 220 to 235, and five weights were 180 to 202. Now for the report from Real Livestock Auction at Congerville for March the 26th. They had receipts of 208 head. Starting with the choice slaughter steers, they were 149 to 155.50. Choice slaughter heifers, 148 to 154.50. Now from the Schuyler Livestock Auction in Rushville. Choice slaughter steers, 148 to 156.25. Select steers were 137.75 to 144. Choice slaughter heifers, 147.25 to 152.75. And select heifers, 138 to 145.50. They also had some feeder cattle, starting with the feeder steers, medium and large ones. Four weights, 213 to 225. Five weights, 198 to 201.50. And six weights were 175 to 192. Feeder heifers, medium and large ones. Four weights were 186 to 199, five weights 175 to 178, with some fancy six weights bringing 194.50, and six weights were just 151 to 163. Now in the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a live basis traded at 146 to 154, and on a dress basis 239 to 246. Heifers on a live basis traded at 152, and on a dress basis 239. From the National Daily Pork FOB Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts were established with 255 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was 130.75, and that was 116 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses were 239.25, that was 251 lower, with select carcasses at 231.21, and that was 210 lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 115,000, which compared to 111,000 last week and 121,000 a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 407,000, which compared to 413,000 last week and 430,000 a year ago. That concludes our report. I'm Bob Reese with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your cash grain bids from Hog Inc. March corn delivered to Greenfield, $4.90. April corn delivered to Greenfield, $4.88. March corn delivered to Scottville, $4.81. April corn delivered to Scottville, $4.79. March beans delivered to Greenfield, $14.40. April beans delivered to Greenfield, $14.39. March beans delivered to Scottville, $14.29. April beans delivered to Scottville, $14.28. March wheat delivered to Scottville, $7.15. Once again, their pre-opening prices are corn at Greenfield is $4.90. Corn at Scottville is $4.81. Beans at Greenfield, $14.40. Beans at Scottville, $14.29. Wheat at Scottville is $7.15. Truckers may start running into a few issues when it comes to getting their physicals required to hold their CDL. President of the Midwest Truckers Association, Don Schaefer, has more.
Yeah, there's a bunch of federal deadlines that are coming up or have already come, both state and federal. The medical registry, you're going to say, what's a medical registry? Well, if you have a commercial driver's license and you need a DOT physical, it has to be done starting next month. There's a new federal law that basically says that the doctor of osteopathy, the nurse practitioner, whoever is going to do the DOT physical has to be registered with the federal government to be qualified to do a DOT physical. This is big because of the fact that in the past there's been a lot of people who just kind of hopscotched around. If they went to one doctor and the doctor said, I can't sign off on you. You got problems. So they passed off on that. And what's happened is that this new registry says everyone who's going to be in doing DOT physicals has to be registered, and they're basically going to be able to track your physical and who you saw. This is to prevent issues of someone slipping in under the radar. You know, maybe someone who's diabetic who should not have a CDL has been signed off by somebody who's kind of turned their head. Someone's had another medical issue that they've been able to skirt around because maybe they had a friend do their physical and got away with it. Well, now this is going to be tightly controlled. The problem is that those doctors or whoever out there, they aren't registering. Now, if you go in, I should say next month, when you go in to say, well, I got to go get my physical done, you better make sure that your doctor can do a physical. And what you can do, I mean, there's a website you go to, but you go to that website and you say, well, you know, how many doctors, you know, within 20 miles of Litchfield, you know, can do a CDL physical? Unfortunately, maybe it used to be 20 or whatever. Now it's just like 3 or 4. So got to watch it real carefully. And also you may want to check, make sure your doctor has registered with the federal government.
That's true. Put some pressure on them.
Yep.
And that's not the only medical area that has been causing a little bit of concern. I hear the Secretary of State's office kind of had a field day.
Yeah, the Secretary of State's office had been in charge of everyone who had a CDL, had to go in and show proof that they had a medical certificate or a medical card. This was part of a federal requirement, and the state of Illinois, like every other state in the country, had numerous deadlines. And you know, in Illinois, where there are tens upon tens of thousands of CDLs, a lot of people had to go in. But also what happened was a lot of people didn't. Well, they had gotten letters from the Secretary of State office saying, get in, show us your medical card, make your designation, these types of things. Well, unfortunately, there were still thousands of people with CDLs who didn't do it. So 2 weeks ago, the Secretary of State's office sent out that the Secretary of State's office sent out that letter saying, sorry, we've yanked your CDL. And boy, did that wake people up. So now people are scurrying to get their CDL reinstated because the deadline had passed to turn in your medical card. So the Secretary of State's enforcing it. I can guarantee you the Illinois State Police is enforcing it. So if you had a CDL and you didn't do it, you know you got a letter in the mail that said your CDL is gone.
Bad news for procrastinators.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, that was President of the Midwest Truckers Association, Don Schaefer. We've all seen the non-GMO hype that's surrounding our food system, and where there is consumer demand, there are farmers who will tailor to that demand. Area farmers have taken to planting acres of non-GMO crops. I spoke with seed specialist for M&M Service Company, Jason Bollard, to talk specifically on GMO soybeans.
There's been some growing interest in planting non-GMO soybeans. With the prevalence of Roundup-resistant water hemp really coming into the region, farmers are needing to put down more and more residuals and vary modes of action, which, in my opinion, they really should have been doing all along. You know, I believe the effectiveness of Roundup really is what has led to its demise. I mean, it was a product that worked so well that, you know, years ago people got away from putting multiple modes of action out on an acre.
And we kind of got into the GMO generation.
Yeah. Well, I would say that most...
The Roundup generation. Misspoke. Sorry.
You know, and I would say I'm one of those that I remember whenever I was a small kid walking a few fields of beans, but Roundup beans, I clearly remember when they came onto the market, and there was a big change. You used to see weedy soybean fields, and then they were spotless, and the Roundup actually worked so well that, you know, guys got away from spending that money on the residuals and putting multiple modes of action out. And, you know, anytime you have a non-selective product like that and you're applying it over hundreds of thousands of acres across the Midwest, you know, Mother Nature always seems to find a way to adapt to what we're doing. So I guess with the prevalence, you know, of the water hemp being more tolerant and resistant to glyphosate, like I said, guys are spending that money and changing up modes of action and putting some of the old chemistries we used to use out on the soybean fields in conjunction with their Roundup. So some guys are thinking, why are we spraying Roundup at all? And they're choosing to plant a few non-GMOs.
There are some benefits, as I understand, to planting non-GMOs. I mean, some farmers, you can get premiums for that, right?
It depends on the year. Depends on the variety. Depends on what the end user wants. There are different premiums out there for certain soybeans. Some are better for grinding, or some have better protein. Some, I'm not exactly positive what the end processors are exactly looking for, but they do publish some lists of specific varieties that will work for the programs that they offer. And from my understanding, program premiums vary drastically from year to year, depending on anticipated demand and, you know, I guess how much surplus there was from the year before. For the most part, it seems like the non-GMOs are kind of a secondary market. You know, if all of our acres that we currently grow of GMO soybeans were converted to non-GMOs tomorrow, I mean, we'd flood these programs and there probably wouldn't be much of a premium offered, would be my guess.
And you already kind of touched on this, but reasons farmers started planting GMO beans would be for better weed control and options like that. Have non-GMO farmers encountered more problems with weeds, or lately, since all the resistance, is it pretty much an equal playing field?
It's still not an equal playing field. In my mind, the edge is still in a glyphosate system, and especially as we start getting some dicamba and 2,4-D tolerant systems, which I think we might see for sale as early as 2015. depending on deregulation by the federal government. You know, you still have some of that flexibility with Roundup. There's more weeds in fields than just water hemp, which is primarily what we're having the problem with controlling with Roundup. And I think it's also a key point to mention that, you know, in the mid-90s, you know, there was PPO resistant in these water hemp populations. So the Cobras and the Phoenix and name your post-applied broadleaf product, you know, there were fields in Montgomery County and Madison County, and I'm sure parts of Macoupin County where our PPO chemistries were failing 20 years ago. So really, as we start going back to non-GMO soybeans, we got to remember that that resistance is still in our weed population. So I'm not positive that the U of I has found any multiple resistant strains of weeds in our listening area, but certainly those developed resistances from 20 years ago aren't going to go away in the population. So the Roundup still does provide that flexibility. And like I said before, I think we need to get back to putting multiple modes of action and not ever giving weeds a chance to get out of the ground so that we have to deal with them later and potentially when they get out of control.
Do you think we're going to see an increase in farmers planting non-GMO beans?
Like I said before, there's kind of a niche demand, especially in some food markets. I used to work with some producers who sold quite a bit of food-grade soybeans. I want to say they had to haul them all the way up to Gibson City on the other side of Bloomington. So, I mean, you know, to get these premiums, a lot of the time you have to jump through hoops. It's not as easy as planting just regular GMO soybeans that you're just going to sell at your local elevator. It takes a lot of time. You have to clean out the planter. You can't have any contamination. And whenever you pull back in the fall, you have to make sure your combine's clean. You can't have any contamination. Your bins have to be clean. You have to make sure that you isolate those fields for purity, because it could take as few as a couple beans to throw away your premium on a whole bin. So It takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of effort, and a lot of care to segregate out those non-GMO soybeans.
It's kind of similar to organic farming in terms of having to keep it all separate.
Yep. I mean, just like organics, you have to keep everything separate. Any contamination, you can throw your premiums out. And then really, you would have been better off planting commercial soybeans instead of going for non-GMO premium in that case.
Is there just as good a variety of non-GMO type beans to choose from and as opposed to GMO beans?
You know, we thankfully live in a capitalist system, and breeding follows where the money is. And if guys are interested in planting Roundup Ready beans, they're going to focus more of their breeding efforts in Roundup Ready beans. And like we mentioned, there is some growing demand for non-GMO soybeans. And actually, I just found out last week that for 2015, we're going to start having some brand new non-GMO varieties released from a couple different suppliers. So it's not just one specific company that has shown, you know, interest to this growing demand, but there will be new varieties out there to take a look at, and they yield exceptionally well, just like everything else. So.
And just to clarify, this switch, it's not for safety or health concerns. GMO beans have been proven to be just as safe as non-GMO.
Absolutely. You know, GMO beans and oil from GMO beans is in our food system today. It has been proven safe over and over and over again. And like I said, there's specialty niche markets that want non-GMO soybeans. And for the most part, that's why those premiums and the beans are out there to cater to those needs. So.
And for farmers who are looking into growing non-GMO beans, do you have any recommendations for them on things to watch out for, whether it be weed control or anything like that?
It's pretty hard to make a blanket recommendation across the whole listening geography, but I would say certainly visit with your local crop specialist. You know, he knows your area the best. The main takeaway is weed control. Like I said before, Roundup offers that flexibility and broad spectrum control. You have to be much more intense in scouting, and you can't let your weeds hardly get out of the ground before you need to be on top of them in a non-GMO system. So, like I said, you can grow non-GMO soybeans. You can grow non-GMO soybeans well and have very clean fields. It just takes that extra level of management and attention than sometimes what some of our bean fields seem to receive. But.
And you brought up some different geographies. Have you noticed that certain geographies tend to have more farmers looking at non-GMO beans?
Really, non-GMOs in general, corn, soybeans, regardless, seems to follow the river markets for export. and where your end processor is going to be as well. I know there are non-GMO programs down in St. Louis, you know, for barge loading for export. There's certainly always non-GMO corn programs. And a lot of times those are buyer's call as well. So I guess the further you are from that end processor, the further you are from your point of sale, the harder it is to, I guess, make sure you're there in a timely fashion when they do call for those bushels. So, you know, convenience to the river or the end processor, I think, has a lot of a factor as far as premiums and GMO versus non-GMO.
Again, that was seed specialist with M&M Service Company, Jason Bowler. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.